As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide supports financial professionals with client-friendly resources and innovative solutions to help create greater retirement security for their clients. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Welcome to the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. I'm Tom Keene. Daily, we bring you insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. Find Bloomberg Surveillance on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Bloomberg.com, and of course, on the Bloomberg. Alan Krueger has been so generous of his time with us on Jobs Day that we usually just bring him in and make jokes about, you know, this, that, or the other thing. Let us remember that he is a former chairman of the President's Council of Economic Advisors and has had a distinguished career in thinking about American labor. He has been a lightning rod of debate on the minimum wage. His exceptionally important book, What Makes a Terrorist, was a must-read 10 years ago, 10 painful years ago, and is out again with a new redo by Professor Krueger, and he joins us on this Jobs Day. This morning, we talked to Iowa yesterday. We talked to people who are working on the reality of labor in the field. Most of the debate seems to be esoteric. And within that, the president seems to have what I would call a classical, more static view of labor versus the miracle of the marginal with a guy named William Stanley Jevons onto Alfred Marshall 130 years ago. How do we drag Trump policy into modern economic theory?
You know, I'd like to see the Justice Department become more active. Just last week.
How would
week,
they do that?
Let me give you an example. At the end of the Obama administration, the Justice Department and the Federal Trade Commission issued guidelines to human resource professionals, advising them that it's illegal for them to have agreements not to raid each other's workers.
Like Disney, Pixar, and all that out in media.
Exactly, or yeah. What hospitals had been doing. And the current Assistant Attorney General for Antitrust has said that they're continuing to enforce those guidelines. And just this week, they brought charges against two companies, agreed that they had violated the law. Knorr Manufacturing Company makes brakes for trains, and then Westinghouse Air Brake Technologies, Wabtec. And there was a third company, and Tom, this is actually kind of what's going on in the U.S. economy in a microcosm. Third company called Favaly was part of this cabal, but Wabtec took over Favaly. So now they could actually do what was illegal before because they're within the same company. And I think that's the sign of the lack of competition that workers are facing in the job market.
John, you lived this growing up in the United Kingdom where there are all sorts of agreements, and Paul Krugman brings it up. And Paul Krugman, I believe, is no longer at Princeton. He's at the University of New York's CUNY, right?
He's emeritus.
Are you emeritus yet?
I am not emeritus.
John Farrell is very emeritus.
I can't wait to be surveillance emeritus, I tell you that.
Yeah, since you've been trying to get me a job at Deutsche Bank and God knows where else, I want you to know I've got probably the best job I could possibly have.
Alan, just to get to the payrolls figures today and to wages more specifically, to what extent are the structural issues that you've identified and done so much research on, to what extent are they actually holding back those headline wage numbers that we look at every month?
Now, I think wage growth has been 0.5% to 1% lower than you would predict based on the historical relationship. So something has changed in the job market, and I think the most obvious candidate is the lack of competition. The job market's less dynamic. We're seeing less mobility across areas. Workers aren't flowing to higher paying areas where there's greater demand. And we also have seen a proliferation of these practices by companies to require workers to sign non-compete agreements. They enter into these no poaching agreements. Franchise companies have no poaching agreements.
Yeah.
And I think that's restricting competition in the job market, and companies are not bidding up wages, even though they say time after time they can't get enough workers.
Every month we have this discussion about whether the labor market is tight, whether we're at full employment. Just from a simple sort of layman point of view, if the labor market was that tight, how are we able to add the payrolls figures that we are every single month? How can we have a month of 313,000 when a couple of years ago, pretty much every single economist I spoke to said, get ready for something in the 100s every single month. We can't keep this up, but we have. How are we doing that?
Well, that's what's driven the unemployment rate down. Don't forget, the unemployment rate's come down very rapidly. We're not seeing workers come back who are out of the labor force. We're seeing workers who would otherwise retire early staying in the labor force longer. And we're seeing people move from unemployment to employment.
Is there monopsony, Professor Krugman? It's a great phrase. It's been one of my pet study projects over the year. Not monopoly, folks, but think of a coal mine owner in a coal mining town as the only employer. Good morning, West Virginia, for listening and in parts of Kentucky. But do you agree with Professor Krugman that there's a little bit of monopsony out there, or a little bit too much?
Absolutely. I've been saying that for 25 years. You know, you go back to the book David Card and I wrote on the minimum wage, our explanation for why we did not find job losses from the minimum wage was monopsony.
But the Republican pushback to that, and I'm not saying Ed Lazier out at Stanford, because I think Professor Lazier would agree with you, but the Republican pushback is everyone for themselves, the Lockean theory, you know, that everybody's in this, they can move. If they don't like West Virginia, they can move to New York City.
But it's costly to move, and that's what gives the monopsony power. You know, in the classical, neoclassical model of the job market, if you have perfect competition, if a company were to cut its pay by one penny, it would lose its whole workforce. And we know that that's not the case. Or if a company is having trouble recruiting, which many companies are today, all they have to do is offer the going wage and they'll get a flood of qualified applicants. And that's not the case. So I think our understanding of the nature of monopsony has changed. We can have monopsony even if we don't have a company town.
Okay, but within that, let's take healthcare as an example, whether it's doctors, young doctors, or nurses, or whatever, they're all screaming that their pay compensations won't go up even though there's a shortage of their skill set.
Well, that's a great example, because that's an area where we've seen increased employer concentration, a large number of mergers, where in many cities now, the industry's not competitive. So the doctors and the nurses are at risk of being exploited.
Professor Krueger, are we going to become like the health system that John Farrell grew up with in England? I don't mean that disparagingly, John, but are we going to become a British system?
I don't think where we are right now is stable. So I think we are going to move in one direction or another. But I think we should also be very proud of the fact that we expanded coverage for so many other Americans.
All of these issues sound like very structural issues to me, Alan. When the Fed chair speaks later today and he reflects on the payrolls report, not of today, but on the payrolls reports of the last few years, can he look at the labor market and say for the Federal Reserve, it's mission complete?
Look, the Federal Reserve's mission is never complete, so I think he certainly wouldn't say that. But one of the real challenges for the Fed is that monetary policy operates with a lag. So they have to be thinking about what's going to happen 6 months from now, what's going to happen 9 months from now. They have to anticipate whether we're going to have imbalances and whether they need to address them to keep the recovery going now. And I think that's the outlook that the Fed should have.
So I understand there is we can get him on the board of governors at the FOMC if he doesn't want the Deutsche Bank job. So Alan, if you're on the board and you were advising them about the labor market 6 to 9 months out, what would you be saying?
You know, we've seen over the past 7 years this gradual healing of the job market. It's been painfully slow, but we are at a point where all of that hard work has paid off. It took us a long time to get here, but the unemployment rate is poised to go below 4%. I'd like to see wage growth get above 3%. And from the Fed standpoint, that is kind of their target. And inflation has been edging up. It's now looking like it's right around 2%. So I think the Fed should be looking at things and saying, how can we keep this going? What's our best monetary policy to ensure that we can kind of keep this recovery going and growing.
Yeah, well, this is good. We're trying to get you a job because we know you're underemployed working a four-hour professorial work week at Princeton. The other job we had for you was to coach AC Milan, But they gave a new contract out to Gennaro Gattuso.
That's a job he doesn't want.
But they advanced it. John, explain to me. This guy had a tryout as a coach, and he's done so well with AC Milan.
I wouldn't say
Milan's
he's done that
redo.
Well. He used to be a player at AC Milan, a fantastic player of that, a World Cup winner for Italy as well in 2006. And I guess there's some nostalgia here or something, Tom.
Yeah. Will he stay around long enough to eat the panettone? That's the question.
That is a great question. Alan Kruger knows the Italian saying, will he be around long enough to eat the panettone? That is a joke. When you take the job at the start of the season, are you around until Christmas to have the panettone? That's a joke in Italy. Alan, how do you know that?
The only professional soccer game I've ever gone to is AC Milan. And I love panettone. So.
Did you fall asleep?
It was 2-0. There were a lot of people there.
Yeah.
It was great. It was so different than watching American football. You couldn't get food. I couldn't believe it. At the halftime, it was almost impossible to get.
You didn't answer my question. Did you fall asleep like I did?
With 80,000 people at the San Siro, there is no falling asleep. It's like going to war.
I believe
it's
folks
so loud.
Yes, chanting.
Coast to coast across America, we now have a debate going here at Bloomberg. So play the Simpsons tape of the soccer game. We'll get to that. It is Jobs Day. We love having Professor Kruger with us of Princeton University. We now welcome on Bloomberg Radio, Bloomberg Television Worldwide. Good morning. William Gross with us of Janice Henderson. Bill Gross, it's just 1 month's data. You take those moving averages. Do you look at the moving averages or do you give caution by a non-farm statistic of 103 and a two-month payroll revision of negative 50? Is it a 53,000 month lousy or is it a better report than that?
Well, it's lousy. And I do look at moving averages too many, to tell you the truth, 200 a day and several years in many cases. But, I think this is a weakish type of report. It's true that, and I would have said going in, that wages were the key consideration. 0.3 was what was expected over a 0.1 last month, so that averages out 0.2 and 2.7 on an annual basis, which isn't much change. And so, I would think this makes for a more cautious Fed, especially in light of the global trade situation that we see on an overnight basis. We're just going to have to see, but I think the Fed will be cautious going forward. My forecast has always been for a one or two hike 2018 type of year.
Bill Gross, if we got wage growth, as John Farrell mentioned, spot on, you've got to take inflation out of that to get to real or inflation-adjusted wage growth. Do we have inflation-adjusted wage growth?
Well, I don't think we have much, and I've got an interesting chart in front of me. You can't show it, but it starts in
the 1980s. It looks good. Oh, Bill, it looks so good on radio. That chart on radio is gorgeous. Bill, continue.
Well, let's talk about it then. Since 1980, real wages have flatlined. It's almost like this patient is dead, and real output has basically doubled. And so where has that productivity gone to? It certainly hasn't gone to wages. It's gone to corporations, and that's good for stocks, I suppose, in terms of earnings. But if the Fed's goal basically is to get wages up and to get that inflation rate at 2% or more, I don't think they're really doing much of a job.
Bill, I want to talk about how you're positioned. You've talked about this short that you've got in high yield over the last couple of months with us on Bloomberg Radio and on Bloomberg TV. It's a short that seems to be struggling to pay off. We've had risk appetite take a real hit over the last couple of months, but all the volatility, all the downside, seems to be in equities, and high yield seems to be where the relative outperformance is in risk assets. Can you explain why you think that is, Bill?
Yeah, high yield's doing okay. High yield tends to, in terms of volatility, say the VIX is 20. High yield tends to have a VIX-related volatility of about 5, about a quarter of what the stock market does. And, it's a slower-moving type of average. And investors wait on high yield to see, the expected number of defaults going forward. And so far, they've been relative benign, Jonathan. So I think that's the main point. What I do say, in addition to that, and the things that are making the short work out over the past month or so, is that, know, the global trade situation and the potential, you know, economic problems that higher interest rates, you know, place on low quality corporate credits, you know, eventually forces those spreads a little wider, and that's basically what the bet's about.
I guess what I'm trying to ask, Bill, is that is there a more optimal way of expressing this sort of hit against risk appetite away from credit in, say, equities, where the volatility seems to be contained and isolated right now?
Well, volatility may be contained, I guess. It's hard for me to make that description. But I think what I'm doing in high yield, it's a little sophisticated, but basically I'm selling calls and selling puts on the HYCDX, which is the, you know, the benchmark for the high yield market. And to the extent that it doesn't move by more than 50 basis points one way or the other over a month's period of time, then you capture the premium. So I'm expecting high yield to gradually move higher, but if it doesn't significantly move lower, then the bet pays off.
Bill Gross with us of Janus Henderson on Bloomberg Television and Bloomberg Radio this morning. Bill, I do want to turn to the politics and fold it into your decades of work in financial theory and economic theory. I'm going to cut to the chase that you're, my guess, a critic of what the president's saying and maybe even doing. What does the president most get wrong?
Well, he gets the trade deficit wrong. I mean, the trade deficit, as most economists would affirm, you know, is a result of overconsumption and undersaving on the part of the United States. Our savings ratio is down to 2%, which is historically low. The trade deficit at 3% plus of GDP is basically relatively high. And to the extent that we like to buy things and not save, then we're going to have a trade deficit because we buy things here in the United States, and then when we can't buy enough, we buy it overseas. And so Trump basically has it wrong. It doesn't mean that we're not being gamed by some countries in terms of tariffs or in terms of technology or cheaper goods and services, but it does mean that there's little way to change the situation by imposing tariffs on foreign goods and services.
So then what do you need from Larry Kudlow? Mr. Kudlow's going to join John Farrow here in about, I'm guessing, 45 minutes, maybe it's 35 minutes. I'm serious, Bill. What does Lawrence Kudlow and other free traders, even Secretary Ross, what do they need to do to stop the discourse that has a political tinge? I understand that. We all understand the president's angle on that, but its effect on China. What does Kudlow need to do to jumpstart that process this weekend?
Well, he needs to calm the verbal tweeting down, so to speak. He needs to basically acknowledge that Trump is a negotiator and that part of the process of negotiation is to go to extremes like he did last night with $100 billion more. You know, the question that the markets have to ascertain is whether or not, you know, there's a semblance of truth to that and whether or not there might be $100 billion behind that. And so, you know, I think in the equity markets that there are risk premiums, as you know, and that, you know, this continued type of verbalization and tweeting on the part of trade, not only tweeting, but real tariffs being imposed, you know, basically raises the equity premium by a half a percent or so relative to what it is. Say it's a 4 to 5% mm-hmm. premium, it raises it by a half a percent.
Right.
What does that do to prices? It lowers it by about 3 or 4% in terms of the stock market.
Bill Gross of Janus Henderson this morning. Futures at negative 20, Dow futures at negative 208. Really the major impact off this jobs report with a moldy report and a lousy revision. But other than that, a pretty buoyant report, as we heard from Jim Glassman and Bill Gross.
Inflation, market volatility, economic insecurity. Who isn't looking for greater retirement security these days? As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide helps millions of people invest in their financial futures. With client-friendly resources and innovative solutions, Nationwide supports financial professionals so they can help clients feel more confident in their retirement years. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
But I'm pleased to say we're now joined on Bloomberg Television and on Bloomberg Radio by Larry Kudlow, the National Economic Council Director, who joins us from outside the White House. Larry, it's great to catch up with you and get your thoughts on the payrolls figure, the labor market, and what has been happening with the trade discussion. The back and forth continues over trade, and the tensions continue to escalate as well, Larry. There is a risk that the damage could be done and undermine what this administration has done around things like the tax bill, around the deregulation push. Do you see the trade effort undermining those things, Larry?
I sure don't. I absolutely do not. In fact, I think to rephrase this narrative, China is the problem, okay? China is the problem. President Trump is the solution, in my judgment. This is the first president in 20 years to have the backbone to go in and challenge China on the kind of unfair and illegal trading practices that they have adopted for the past several decades. I just want to make that point.
And sure.
Second, directly to your question about growth. Look, China is stealing our technology. All right, their intellectual property rights are being stolen, these forced technology transfers. I was on the phone last evening with my friend and trade ambassador Bob Lighthizer. I've known him for years, a great person. And we kind of walked through, you know, what is the heart of the American economy? It's entrepreneurship, it's innovation, and it's based on technology. I think this is a very important point, and I want to transmit his views on this because they're terribly important and they're on target. We cannot allow our technology breakthroughs, which is what's made America competitive and great,
yeah,
and with lower taxes and regulations, it's going to be even better, but we cannot give them away to be stolen by the Chinese government anymore. It doesn't work.
Larry, just to jump in, the narrative of this program for the last few weeks, it's important. Let me finish, Larry. Let me finish, because the narrative of this program has always been that China is a problem. China is a problem. The debate I want to have with you, the discussion I want to have with you, and what our audience needs is details on the approach and when you're going to get results. So if we can spend less time talking about the problem, I want to talk about the approach. Are you actually having discussions with the Chinese?
All right, you're either going to let me talk or you're not, my friend. You're either going to let me talk or not, okay? You wanted me to come on. I'm happy to do it.
Well, Larry, talk. I want you to give me the idea of what is happening behind the scenes. Are you having discussions with the Chinese?
There are always ongoing discussions with the Chinese, always. And President Trump, I traveled with him all day yesterday. President Trump indicated to me for the umpteenth time that he has great respect for President Xi, and Xi has respect for President Trump. And President Trump regards Xi as somebody who would be a very talented negotiator if and when negotiations begin. They have not really begun yet. China's response to our complaints, their response has been unsatisfactory. All right? And that's why we're looking. I use the word looking. We haven't proposed anything. They're considering a second round of tariff actions. But it has not come to pass. There is no execution of this. It's just consideration. It's really up to the USTR below the president. And so, therefore, the conversations go on as they always do. The president speaks to Xi. The second and third level speak to each other. Perhaps, there will be some fruitful negotiations so far, but I would say they've been unsatisfactory. So we will see.
So, Larry, help me understand when the negotiations will actually begin, because people are trying to find out what the time horizon
is. There's no timetable
whatsoever. So you can tell me what happens after 60 days, Larry.
That's the thing. I really encourage everybody to read carefully the president's announcement yesterday, the White House press release, and also Ambassador Lighthizer's press release. We are considering adding tariff pressures, considering. I don't even want to call that a negotiating point. There may be negotiations in the next couple of months. I hope so. I think everybody hopes so, because I guess to your point in the beginning, I don't want to disrupt the economy. The president doesn't want to disrupt the economy. We need not disrupt the economy. But the point here is we're going to have several months open discussion. People will submit comments. The public will submit comments. They will be reviewed by the USTR and elsewhere. And at that point, I don't want to put a deadline on it. I'll use the phrase couple months. we will then, the administration will then make a decision with respect to whether these proposed tariffs will be put into place. There can be, look, there can and will be conversations during this whole period of, I'm just going to say several months. Can't put a time.
That's fine. Well, the Chinese out this morning, Larry, saying that there will be discussions at the moment.
Yeah. Along the way.
But I guess,
and to be honest with you, I want to use the phrase that Ambassador Lighthizer used with me last night.
Sure.
This is a moderate, tempered approach that we are taking. It is moderate, temperate, and proportional. This is not a trade war. There's no war here. All we're trying to do is save and defend American technology, which is crucial to American economic growth and, by the way, global economic growth. This whole program, whether it's tax rate reduction or rollback of regulatory costs or rollback of energy problems and now trade, this is all designed to promote faster economic growth in the United States, and I believe we will. I believe we've
already
started to grow the economy.
Larry, I am pushed for time, and your PR will shout at you, and my producer will shout at you, and I want to fit a few more questions in. I want to understand what the Chinese can do to satisfy the concerns of the president and this administration over the next several months. What can they do tomorrow that can make all of this go away?
Well, look, I think there'll be a discussion. I want to tread lightly here because I don't want to get ahead of the game. I think Ambassador Lighthizer and the president are thinking about submitting a list of suggestions to the Chinese. And I underscore I think, but that is a possibility, okay? Possibility. If so, then hopefully the Chinese would respond with some ideas that will solve this technology transfer and stealing
issue. What's on the list, Larry?
Solve it.
What would you put on the list?
Well, look, my friend, there's no secret here. They've got enormous trade and tariff barriers. All right? They have technology, forced technology transfers. They got to stop their stealing of the intellectual property that we try to use in any company around the world. Those are good places to start. China's probably got to work with this. Look, they have to open their markets. Is that a surprise? Their markets are relatively closed. Remember, even though 20 years ago they made good movement in free markets, I give them credit for that, absolutely.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, in recent years, they have moved backwards. Half the economy remains state-run. The state-run corporations and the state-run banks are operating. Half the economy is incredibly inefficient, and they want to stock American exports. They have to lower those barriers. They have to open markets. They have to look at opening investment opportunities, and they have to look at the technology transfers and stealing.
And in the meantime, Larry, the stock market's looking really soft here again, and I just wanted just to finish up as a final question.
Which market is looking soft? Which market is
the equity market. We're down about 0.6%. We're off by about 0.7% on the Dow. We're raising the weekly gain. I guess my final question to you guys is, I understand the problem, Larry.
We've had a tremendous run in the stock market. We've had a tremendous run.
I want to correct you. Larry. I'm saying the facts of what's on the screen in the moment. I can tell you what the year-to-date price is. I can tell you the one-year price. I have a final question.
So I ask you this.
One final question, Larry. My interview, I ask the
really
questions. You answer them, Larry. Are we struggling to identify the difference between proposals, rhetoric, and policy? And does the White House have a communication problem? Does the White House have a communication problem, Larry?
I can't hear you. You're talking over me so much I can't hear you.
Well, Larry, that's how this works. I ask the question and you answer it. Does the White House have a communication problem? Because so many people don't understand the difference between rhetoric, policy, and proposals. Do you have a communication problem? Because it appears to me that you do.
Well, look, if you read the press releases, it spells out in great detail what we're doing here. So I don't know how better to communicate. I'm on your show, so when you let me talk, I'm trying to communicate exactly what this is. We have not, by the way, I'll just go through this one more time. We have not executed or implemented any new tariffs. We haven't even declared our absolute 100% intention. If you read the press release, the president has asked the STR, Ambassador Lighthizer, to consider whether or not additional tariff discussions or actions will be necessary in the future. Nothing has been done so far, as I said earlier, these things will be put out for public comment. Those comments will be received and evaluated. STR will come back to the president with its own report. You know, just on that, one point, STR, Lighthizer, they did a 180-page report over the past year, which shows not only the centrality of technology as central to our economy, but why China and their actions, which break all the laws of the World Trade Organization, why they are taking away our technology, which is our most valuable asset. Right? So we can't stand by on this. So to answer your question, it's very clear to me. We are looking, evaluating, putting out for public comment the worth or utility of additional tariff actions to make our point that China's illegal activity in trade and elsewhere can no longer be tolerated. Blame China for not playing ball. Don't blame the president. He's standing up for American companies and business. That's my take. I don't see how I can communicate that more clearly.
Hey, Larry, you're a good sport, and I appreciate your time. And thank you for coming on the program and giving us your time. And hopefully, Larry, you'll be back in front of the camera with me next month. Larry Kudlow, National Economic Council Director. We appreciate his time.
With us, Michael Darda, Chief Economist, MKM Holdings. What was not discussed in that conversation, Michael, and you, of course, have a, this is part of your fabric with your academics out of Wisconsin, is the discussion of this, not between the aggregate of the United States, the aggregate of China, but the distinction between West Virginia and Iowa. Can any president have a trade policy that satisfies West Virginia, and at the same time, Iowa?
Follow the Hippocratic Oath here, which is first, do no harm. You know, we've seen the market reaction to some of the verbal bluster coming out of the administration. It's been negative, and it's negative for a reason. I mean, if this is simply over, you know, if this is due to a concern about intellectual property, that's very legitimate. But, you know, what is the proper channel here? Is it a legal channel? Is it the WTO? Or is it moving forward aggressively with tariffs, trade protectionism? And if it's the latter, you know, unfortunately, that will be disruptive and it will hurt growth. And it is hurting confidence now, whether they're proposals that become realities or not. You know, the markets do discount, and that's where we are.
Michael Darda, I'm wondering if you could just look into the future a little bit, because many of these issues have to do with intellectual property, which go into products that have yet to even reach the market. We know, for example, you know, every iteration of new smartphones, computers, and technology, and so on. But the actual consumer market for those products is shifting to Asia, not the United States. And just in terms of just the demographics that exist, you know, India is going to overtake China as the most populous country by about 2050. I wonder if you could speak to that issue and whether this is kind of fighting, you know, last century's wars.
Yeah, Pim, I think it is. I mean, look, if it's a matter of intellectual property theft, I mean, if that's a legitimate concern, the question is, what is the proper channel through which to deal with that? The WTO, the Justice Department, or if this is simply a concern about trade deficits. You know, when I listen to President Trump speak, you guys have had Peter Navarro on your show, Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, you know, they seem to be focused on the trade deficit as an issue, you know, rather than what we were just hearing about intellectual property concerns. And the trade deficit is just the reciprocal of a capital inflow coming into the country. And if we're moving into larger late cycle deficits, and as a result, investment is higher, you know, than the sum of private and public savings, we're going to have a bigger trade deficit. The fear I have is that if the administration is fighting an accounting identity here with protectionist trade efforts, then we end up in sort of a Smoot-Hawley loop-de-loop where the trade deficit figures get worse, the protectionist rhetoric is ratcheted up. You know, we saw the trade deficit figures for February. They came in worse than expected. And then, you know, last night, you know, we had news of greater tariff considerations. I don't know if they're linked, but that kind of a thing scares me.
Well, the news to me, Pim Fox and Michael Darda, is Mr. Kudlow and Mr. Farrell moved the market. I rarely say this, folks, but we got a nice 100-point lift in the market. And when you see the Bloomberg headlines that go out to everybody in finance and economics, Pim Fox, Kudlow says there are always discussions with China. Kudlow says second round of tariffs, just a consideration. Kudlow hopes for negotiations with China in the next months. And you see S&P and Dow pair gains.
Yeah, but I would also I'd also mention that you're seeing a little bit more buying of treasuries, right? Up 13/32 for the 30-year at 3.05%.
Fair.
And the dollar at 107.25.
With curve flattening.
Yes, indeed. All right. So Michael Darda, this idea of trade wars, trade confrontation, it doesn't just exist when it comes to China, but also Mexico and Canada. Do you have any thoughts on how that is going to be resolved, how that will work out, and whether that will have a much larger effect on U.S. investors?
Well, I think, you know, most investors probably hope that the bark is worse than the bite here. You know, we've heard a lot of bluster. We'll have to see what the actual policy follow through is. But, you know, we've heard a lot about tax reform and regulatory relief. Investors have been focused on those things as potentially boosting growth. But we should be thinking about more restrictive trade policies and more restrictive immigration policies as things that retard growth from the supply side, offsetting, you know, any potential supply side lift coming from tax reform or regulatory relief. So to me, when I look at, you know, the whole suite of policies here, it's a real mixed bag at best.
Looking at Mexico, for example, a big importer of U.S. energy products.
Absolutely. Listen, the less disruptive we can be, the better outcome that, you know, that will be for the business cycle and the equity markets. I think we have to be very careful here. And I'll just reiterate again, if the concern is over the trade deficit, that is an accounting identity. If you want the trade deficit to fall, the U.S. is going to have to save more relative to what it invests. You are not going to remedy that with tariff walls.
And we're at a point now where U.S. consumers are actually saving less than they did, let's say, three months ago.
Well, in the sum of public and private savings, that's really the issue. So right with the latest GDP statistics, we actually saw the household savings rate moving down pretty significantly. Fiscal deficits are headed up 9 years into a business cycle because we just did a big tax cut and raised government spending over the next 2 years at the same time. So, you know, look, I'm in favor of supply side policies as much as anyone else, but we do need to be concerned about, you know, responsible fiscal actions as well. And doing a tax reform
right.
really means revenue neutrality, at least in my book. And we've utterly failed on that score.
Mike, one final question, and it goes back to what Pim was talking about earlier about the markets. What does Michael Darda do with cash right now? Is cash of value to you, or do you need to be in the market?
Well, Tom, I mean, I think that is going to have to do a lot with a person's age, what their risk tolerance is, you know.
He's just trying to get to April 15th, Tom.
I'm just trying to clear my Bitcoin trade. I am so underwater.
I think it always makes sense to have some cash on hand. Now it's going to depend on someone's age. I mean, if you're in your early 20s and you're just starting your career and you're mainly investing through your 401k, then yeah, you don't want to be sitting on hoards and hoards of cash. But especially for anyone that's closer to middle age or even moving out of middle age, I won't mention any names. Having that cash.
You're so charitable, Michael. Yeah,
keep it up.
Good work. Yeah.
Yeah. Having that cash cushion can come in very handy, right? So, if we do have a significant market pullback, let's say there's a recession and a bear market out there sometime in the next, 3 to 5 years, you want the ability to be able to add to equity positions if we do end up down 20% or more in equity markets.
Yeah.
So it can come in quite handy.
Well, I'll tell you, Michael Darda, I am so ready to buy into the long tuition fund, which is a good place to go. Michael Darda, MKM Partners with us, was a terrific perspective, particularly Pim right at the top. Darda acclaimed for his animal spirits and nominal GDP analysis, talking about a dampening of nominal GDP. Thanks for listening to the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. Subscribe and listen to interviews on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, or whichever podcast platform you prefer. I'm on Twitter at Tom Keen. Before the podcast, you can always catch us worldwide on Bloomberg Radio.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.